Cougar fans, it is time.
Touchdown! What a grab!
It's time to raise your colors, raise your voice, and join in on the raucous roundtable about your favorite team, the BYU Cougars.
20, 15, 10, 5, touchdown!
It's time to tailgate. Cougar Tailgate, where BYU sports fandom lives. And here's your host, Lauren McClain.
Today is part two of my conversation with Senior Assistant Athletic Director for Broadcast Relations, Duff Tittle, and Assistant Athletic Director for Football Strategic Communications, Brett Pine. They are the authors of the new book, 100 Years of BYU Football, that released on June 3rd at Deseret Book.
It begins with you guys talking about famed Notre Dame head football coach Newt Rockne, visited BYU, was hired as an adjunct professor for a time, which is crazy, right? And then helped shape the beginning of the BYU football program. Brett, talk about that a little bit.
You know, that's a story I think maybe some people have heard before, but there's a lot of it that wasn't known. And one of the things that we kind of uncovered was a letter that Newt Rockne had written back to the BYU faculty and the coaches. So in essence, he was coming out to do some, you know, football help with the program. And the only way that he could get paid was to become an adjunct professor. And so, he actually, you know, there was grading involved in the class and everything. And so there's like a back and forth with him, like about grades. And, you know, it's just kind of fun to discover these kinds of things and actually see the letter and things that are written in there. And, you know, I mean, he unfortunately passed away earlier than he would have wanted but, you know, was an all-time coach, you know, and to think of BYU in that era, you know, really unknown in terms of the brand of BYU, and we can get into this, but, I mean, how it's grown. But, you know, at that time, I mean, having someone like Newt Rockne come to BYU was pretty significant.
And Newt Rockne, who was, if not the original guy to start the forward pass, right? And then he invited some of BYU's early coaches, I was reading in your book, to come to his camps, and, mm-hmm. and really he had such a huge hand in starting the BYU football program. Let's jump to 1953, because I loved this. First televised BYU-Utah rivalry game with a viewership of over 60 million, and that was huge publicity for BYU. So you're kind of into the broadcast world, Duff. Talk a little bit about that moment there.
Well, even huge numbers of today, you know, the national championship games, not a fraction of 60 million people watching a college football game. It basically was the second year that college football was on television. They had tried it the previous year, and I believe there were 8 games selected in 52, something like that.
Yeah.
And then 53 rolled around, and BYU and Utah were selected to play in one of the 12 or 13 games that were broadcast nationally that year. That's it. In today's world, to think there were only 12 or 13 games broadcast is kind of a crazy thought, but that's the way it was. And television was in its infancy, and broadcasting live college football games was. And BYU Utah were fortunate enough to play in that game. It was on Thanksgiving Day. It was in Salt Lake City. We were, I think, a 4-touchdown underdog and missed an extra point late in that game that would have tied the game. But yeah, to think that 60 million people watched that across the country on Thanksgiving Day is a remarkable thought. And it was the first live television broadcast in the Rocky Mountain region. Mm. So pretty cool. The great Mel Allen, who was the Yankee sportscaster, called that game, which is also a kind of a unique, cool thing. Because when we were kids, there was a Saturday program called This Week in Baseball. And Mel Allen was the host. And so the voice of Mel Allen is something I'll always remember. But
so cool.
Kind of a cool thing.
It's
really
amazing.
Yeah, that actually started because I was looking for some things for Legacy Hall at one point, our museum on campus, our athletic museum. And I came across a listing where they were auctioning off the Mel Allen estate. And one of the things in that estate was a media guide and a press pass from BYU in 1953.
Wow.
And I'm like, what is
this
all about?
Which you have a picture of in your book.
That's correct. So I actually bought the...
You bought it?
I bought the listing. Yeah, that's why the the press credentials in the book is because I own it. There was a press photo of Mel Allen that was also included in the estate sale, so I bought them both.
Wow.
And so then we started to do some digging about this game, and turns out that in the special collections at BYU, there's memos going back and forth from the network and the sponsor, and they held a big gala in Salt Lake and a big party the night before the game. It was a big deal, you know. Who would have known?
You guys mentioned in your book, too, that kind of put BYU football on the map, where especially people right on the East Coast probably didn't know much about them, and then here they are, the BYU-Utah rivalry.
And I really think it speaks to what became part of our legacy as far as when you think of BYU football. I mean, you think of the football program itself, but you think of our fan base, and you think of our legacy in broadcasting, really. I mean, it's, you know, being one of the early chosen games on a national scale to be featured when hardly anyone was being featured. And then later we go into the book and some things, you know, whether it was radio or television, and ways in which those things, as they evolved and were brought to elite levels of, you know, how things are done. And here in the building at BYU Broadcasting, you guys know better than anybody because you guys do it at such an elite level. But the broadcasting legacy associated with BYU athletics and the BYU football program in particular are a great part of why, you know, the brand has become what it's become.
Right.
And that was an early beginning of it. But there's other elements of that we try to note in the book as well.
That's been a big recruiting tool, I know, for BYU football since this, especially this broadcast building has been established. And really, you guys have been around so many different programs, even just traveling around. Brett, have you ever seen anything like this? Because you do kind of go into depth in your book about it. Have you ever seen anything like this at any other school?
You know, we are definitely an elite company when it comes to that. I mean, there's a few handful of places that have some things that maybe aren't directly comparable, but close and comparable. But I think you could definitely say we are among the very best in the country, among a handful of schools. And the way in which we do it, even the early beginnings, you know, back to the old Blue and White Network, and there's always been kind of a motivation on the part of, and this isn't just athletics, this is like the leadership in the old KBYU, and that how do we help our fans that are not living in the local marketplace here have access to these games and to follow and be able to enjoy the passion that comes with their fandom for BYU football. And those efforts over the years have just, you know, really brought to fruition a lot of these great things. But our facilities here are, you know, second to none.
Well, I'm going to jump to some of my favorites. Let's jump to 1974, the players only meeting, because this was something I had briefly heard about kind of in passing, but I didn't know the details till I read it in your book. Lavelle's called it the turning point in his own career. Duff, tell us a little bit about that.
So in other projects that we've worked on over the years, we've set up interviews for Lavelle and been there when he's done interviews. We've done our own interviews with Lavelle. I think there's about four times that I sat down with Lavelle and tried to get him to tell me some in-depth stories. Mm-hmm. And he points to that as maybe the turning point in his career. Had that meeting not happened and those players not got together to try to right the ship for that particular season in 1974, that he's not sure he might have, you know, he might have been here much longer. It's a really cool story. And we had the opportunity to talk to probably half a dozen players that were actually in that meeting, that players only meeting.
Yeah.
It's part of one of my favorite stories too, actually.
It's so cool. Yeah. And Gary Scheide, I think, was the quarterback at that time, right?
He certainly was. Yeah.
Love
he's
Gary.
The one that got it started, and now he's of course part of the BYU broadcast family.
Yeah.
50 years ago.
They're having their 50th anniversary this fall.
That's incredible.
For that team. It's also the first team that went to a bowl game. They righted the ship, this players only meeting. Maybe we just tease it. We don't tell all about it.
Yeah. You just tease it a little bit.
But they went on to win 7 straight games after that, captured the second conference championship ever at the school, which was Lavelle's first, and then won their way into the first bowl game ever. The Fiesta Bowl.
Yeah. They were losing and losing badly the first few games of the season. Players only meeting.
Yep.
End up going undefeated from there on out. First bowl game. And then they end up ranked.
Yeah.
In the top 25. Patty Edwards, I love that you brought up her, and this was something I didn't know, that she started the American Football Coaches Wives Association. Brett, what's been your interaction with Patty and as you've written this book?
Well, in this particular case, Duff was the one that actually talked to Patty, but, I mean, Patty continues to be, you know, later this year there will be some things that BYUB is doing with regard to our 1984 team. And we did some things with Patty earlier this year with that and the athletes from that team. I mean, she has always been an advocate for her husband. And, I mean, I think some of the things you find in her discovery in her life of, like, you know, when she finally realizes, I guess I'm a coach's wife and I'm going to have to learn how to deal with this, right? And all that comes with that and how she just turned that into such a positive thing and a legacy that continues to this day of that she kind of initiated. And, you know, Duff could probably speak a little bit more to some of those interactions with her, but she definitely, I know Kalani, you know, you kind of get choked up, but he's very much, that's a relationship that is very meaningful, and she still has a significant influence on people. The people that, like Kalani and all these other players that were part of the program when Lavelle was coaching, and then even beyond, they've just always been very good stewards for the football program.
I'm glad you asked Brett that question, because I can't talk about Patty without getting emotional. So
she
certainly is the first lady of BYU football. And you mentioned the national organization that she helped find with the Coaches Wives Association was actually started with Jim Harbaugh's mother. So it was Patty and Mrs. Harbaugh that started that organization with a conversation they had in Park City, Utah, before a game where their husbands were going to coach against each other. And it led to them starting this organization, which now has more than 3,000 women across the country that are involved in that program. So
unreal.
Very cool.
So cool.
We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll have more from Duff Tittle and Brett Pine, authors of 100 Years of BYU Football.
Welcome back to Cougar Tailgate. I'm Lauren McClain, continuing my conversation with Senior Assistant Athletic Director for Broadcast Relations, Duff Tittle, and Assistant Athletic Director for Football Strategic Communications, Brett Pine. Let's jump to back to Harlene, because this is where my memories start to get real good with BYU football. 1:19 left in the game, down 4. This was something I read in your book that I didn't know, that John Beck says, "Let's hurry up and do this so we can celebrate and go home." I love it. He's like, no, like they said that he just had all the confidence in the world in that moment, and let's just hurry up and go home and do this. Brett, what do you like about that segment of the book?
You know, that was a fun thing, because throughout the book, I mean, when we first started thinking about, oh, we could talk about this game and this game and this game, but then as the narrative kind of went through, it was, you know, we talked about a lot of games, obviously, but there was certain games that just kind of seemed to have a little bit more of a, you know, a memory point for a lot of people, and this was one of them. And it was really interesting, because I think everyone's got their own perspective of that. But it's interesting to get it from the perspective of the players that were part of it. And you know, even like Daniel Coates, who talks about, you know, he catches a touchdown that seemingly might be the winning touchdown.
Yeah.
And how
he
that
thought
all,
he was going to have all the glory.
How
yeah.
that
yeah.
all
right?
how that all changes. How that all changes as we all know how that game ended. But that was a fun, the perspective of Johnny Harlene and John Beck and Daniel Coates and just looking at how that really progressed, and even people like McKay Jacobson,
yeah.
Who was a freshman. And how he stepped up and played in that game, and how respected he was among his teammates, and all the things that went into kind of making that happen. It was fun to be able to dive into a few of those instances where you could kind of give a little bit more behind the scenes.
Continuing with the Bronco Mendenhall era and McKay Jacobson, 2009, Max Hall and BYU versus No. 3 Oklahoma. Max Hall screaming, "We're going to win," at halftime to the fans. That was something I didn't know either. And he mentions in the book that he said, that was probably something really stupid. He's like, I don't know why I did that. I loved that. Duff, what stood out to you in interviewing all those players for the game? Max Hall, Dennis Pitta, Kobe Klaassen, McKay Jacobson. You have a lot of good interviews in there.
Well, part of it is I was right next to Max coming off the field when he did it. So I was aware that it had happened. So I asked him about it, and then he was, of course, said that maybe not the smartest thing I've ever done. You know, that group was so good, and they won so many games. You know, Max, the winningest quarterback in BYU history with 33 wins, and just it was a lot of fun to be involved with that group. They were as competitive as anybody I've ever been around, and so the stories are really cool. And when you're kind of with them and you see these things unfold, and then you can ask them very pointed questions about the experience, because, you know, maybe you saw a glimpse of it or you were a part of it.
You're
in
some
way.
I heard you say that.
Right, exactly. So you could kind of ask them about it a little bit. And, you know, like Brett said, there's a couple dozen games that if you're part of Cougar Nation, those games just mean something, right? They take you back to a different time and a different place where you kind of became a fan. Mm-hmm. And we didn't just want to rehash those games. You know, it's easy to just pull the stats out and kind of hash through. We scored this and that, and then they scored. And we wanted really to get the viewpoint of the student athlete and the coach and the administrator that was involved in those games. That was the fun of the book, really, is trying to let it be told through the eyes of those who were there. And that's actually one of the things that was hard for me and Brett is we got into our time period, our era, right? From the mid-1990s on, we were first-person observers of some of these things. And that was hard to write. There's maybe a little bit less of some of those quotes because we were actually the people observing.
Wow.
So, and when you're writing in it, the way we wrote, we couldn't write in first person. So that was kind of weird. It was a weird way of trying to figure out how do we say this when we saw it?
Yeah. How cool for fans though, that they know everything that's being said is fact. You were there. This is first person. A lot of these things are interviews, but I think that's a powerful thing to know that you guys were right there on the sideline or in the locker room witnessing all these things. I hope I'm not giving too much away. I want to do one more with you, Brett, but I loved reading about this, the 2015 Mangum Miracle at Nebraska, how Devon Blackman said the prayer at a fireside the day before, and he asked God to beat Nebraska. And you mentioned in the book, everyone's kind of smiling, and then look what happened the next day. What do you remember about that?
Oh, our fireside was in Omaha, and you know, isn't too far away from, kind of on the outskirts of Omaha towards Lincoln, you know, I just remember that feeling of, because Devon, if you know Devon, he's just like, you know, he is sunshine. You know, I mean, he's always just a great guy, and you know, he'd been asked, and it was organized. I off the top of my head, right this moment, I'm not recalling who organized everything, his speakers and everything for that, but he'd been asked to say the closing prayer, and he comes strolling up there, and just Devon, and it was such a sincere prayer. But then when he prayed that we would win, and you could just see the smirks on people's faces, it's like, okay, I wasn't expecting that, you know. But then obviously how that game played out, you know, proved a little bit prophetic that way. He's such a, you know, there's so many great people that have been involved in the program and that have had an influence on people, you know. And one thing I, you know, tried to do where possible was like, is it possible to note something like that? It maybe isn't a huge event or something, but something that maybe people weren't aware of. And in this case, there were some published reports about that because media were there that maybe mentioned that he had done that, but you know, maybe not widely known.
Right.
But yeah, so it was fun to you know, kind of tell some of those stories and let some of those other personalities that are existing, you know, within the program be out there a little bit. So,
and let's talk about 2020, because that honestly was an incredible year. You guys write about it in the book, the COVID year. Tom Holmoe put together a full schedule and some games in a matter of days during that time. it was incredible. He ended up winning Athletic Director of the Year, I believe. Duff, tell us a little bit about what you remember about that time.
It's a bit of a whirlwind in my mind, actually. It was one of those years that just, you know, you think X is going to happen. And then within a matter of hours, days, it just was unraveling. The whole season was unraveling. It was actually a really good football season. The games we were going to play that year were incredible. The places we were going to go, there was a lot of excitement. And then, it was pretty much over. And, you know, Tom just refused to quit. He just kept after it and after it and after it. And it really shows he is a people person, and it really shows the people he knows in the world of college athletics to be able to put that thing together. And then those that helped him at ESPN and others that were involved in that process was fascinating to see that, you know. And then on the field, the guys just kept finding a way to win. And I really don't care who we played. I mean, people will say, well, you played this or you played that. It doesn't matter. Yeah. The reality of it is we just found ways to play, and we just kept winning. And the guys, it was quite a magical season. And because we were doing so well, and we were, I'd say, a brand program that ESPN could count on in our partnership with them. And we just kept playing, and we were giving them games every week, starting with the very first game at Navy, on Monday night. And it was a ride. That's the best way I can put it. It's kind of a little bit of my memories of the Jimmer era in basketball. It was just a wild ride. It was just like you kind of felt like buckle your seatbelt because here we go. And we were hanging on for dear life, I think, in many ways. And everything just had to be on the fly, the game at Coastal Carolina. I mean, we were Wednesday, and we weren't even sure we were going to play a game that week. And next thing you know, we're on our way, and Brent got COVID. Yeah.
An example of the ways in which, at key points in time over this whole history of a century, there's just been these different moments where we kind of stepped up as a program and did things. And this is, to me, one of them where we were very nationally relevant. We were at one point the only team west of in the western part of the country even playing football. And, our administration and our coaches and were always very intent on doing everything they could to be safe and follow everything that needed to be done, but also provide every opportunity for our student athletes.
Yeah.
And you can see by how it came about that was very impactful, I mean, it was meaningful to the program and the kind of year that we had, and even just who we are as a brand nationally, I think, was something that helped advance that as well.
You guys have been around so many players and a handful of coaches that you guys talk about in this book. You mentioned, Ziggy Ansah, Kyle Van Noy, Jamal Williams, Taysom Hill, Max Hall, just so many others. Throughout both of your time at BYU, who's been one of your favorite coaches or players that you've been able to work with? We'll start with Brett.
Wow.
That's a tough question. That really is.
Well, I couldn't answer that. I do, Travis Uwale could attest to this, that I always tell him I'm president of his fan club. but if he ever hears this, he'll chuckle. But, there are really so many. That's the one great thing about the job that I've had, that I have, is, and it's a point I make. I mean, I have a cousin that played quarterback at BYU that no one knows his name because his name is Lane Bates, but he was a backup quarterback that ran scout team when Detmer and Sean Covey in the late 80s were the ones that people recognized, And you kind of realize all the things that people do to help the program be successful. I mean, in the book, Max Hall talking about, when he had to run the scout team his first year here and how much that impacted his experience at BYU and really end up helping our program a lot. So it would be hard to say just one because there's so many people that are, you can go from the Jamal Williams and Fred Warners and Kyle Van Noy's. And I mean, there's a fun story in there of something that we knew that we experienced on from Kyle on the sideline during that bowl game where he just took over, and we tell that story in there too. And it's just there's just fun things like that. But really, we have had so many great and outstanding athletes. But you know, Ty Detmer's always kind of, you know, and Ty wrote the foreword for this book, and he's an all timer.
Yeah. He's incredible.
In so many ways, Ty is an all-timer. He's just one of the best human beings I've ever been around. I have a hard time talking about this topic because I'll get emotional. My first season was the 96 Cotton Bowl team, and there were larger-than-life individuals on that team. And so many went on to play at the next level, and it was an amazing – that was my first experience. And I just assumed, well, every year is going to be like this. You know what I mean? But going through the process of a season with these student athletes and seeing the challenges that they have and the things they overcome and the success they have, and you kind of become emotionally attached to it. You really do. And I'm like Brett, and I used to hear Lavelle say this all the time when they'd ask, what's your favorite quarterback, Lavelle? And he'd say, well, I can't, I like them all.
It's like asking, what's your favorite kid, right?
Exactly, you know? Yeah, right. Like asking you, which one of your children do you like the best? Because if you feel that way, I had an experience with Tanner Mangum, and Brett did too. Outstanding individual. We had some great experiences with him. And his career didn't turn out kind of what he thought it would be, ultimately. But those memories are what I'm going to always remember. You know, I better be careful here because, you know, I'm going to get teary, but I remember saying goodbye to him after the bowl game, his senior year, just how much I appreciated him and who he was. We already talked about the Max Hall, Dennis Pitta, Austin Colley, Harvey Unga. Imagine being the PR people for that group of individuals. I mean, it was a fun ride. It was just something else. And they were as competitive as anybody I've ever been around. Those, you didn't want to play them in anything, whether it was they were into bocce ball, and I got the chance to play bocce ball with them one time. I've never seen so much trash talking.
I'm sure. I can't even imagine.
But it speaks to why, I mean, a great program, but it's great people that make it. And Kalani always speaks to that as being the currency of our program. It's the people. Mm-hmm. And that's really true. And Lavelle is the greatest example of that. He's the Hall of Famer in that category. So
many different personalities coming from so many different backgrounds. And I like, Brett, that you mentioned the unsung heroes as well on the football team and just within the program. I want to ask you guys, because you've been here over 25 years, what's been your favorite thing about being a part of BYU specifically? We'll start with Brett.
My favorite part about being a part of BYU? Wow. These are tough questions.
They're kind of
they're tough because, you know, I mean, really, I believe in the mission of the university and what it stands for. And I have, you know, truly enjoyed the opportunity to be part of advancing that mission, and it's been fulfilling to see things progress and things go forward, and to, in our job, aside from this book project, helping to advance that and help people be recognized for what they've done, and even the ones that aren't as recognized, but you know that internally their recognition they're receiving from their peers and people at the department. But that's been the best part of it.
What about for you, Def?
I could just say amen to that, really. I mean, it's the exact same reason why I wanted to be involved in it in the first place and have been involved in it for so long. Having the opportunity to work with Lavelle Edwards in the twilight of his career was a real honor. And just being around him, you learned so much. He didn't have to say anything, really. You just observed the way that he treated people and the way he was in settings. And I had a chance, I want to say it was the mid-2000s, about 2005 or 2006, to travel with Lavelle and Patty to the College Football Awards show back in Florida. They were giving him a career achievement award, and just being with them was one of the coolest experiences of my career. Absolutely, without question. We spent an evening there. They had this event, like a dinner gala thing, and we were with the executive director of the Davey O'Brien, and we were sitting over kind of in the corner during this dinner, and it was who's who of college football that was there that night. Coaches, media, some of the great players of the game at that time, some of the great players that were in town to give all the awards that evening for the ESPN College Football Show. And person after person just coming by and saying hi to Lavelle and Patty and recognizing their role in how they changed and shaped college football. It was one of the most eye-opening experiences of my life. And how one, I shouldn't say one, because it was Patty and Lavelle, how two individuals could have made such a difference. And so when we started to write this book and to tell the Lavelle Edwards portion of these 100 years, it was really important to us to make sure we did that well and did that correctly to give him the recognition that he deserves for revolutionizing college football.
And you guys had a front row seat. How cool
for the
that?
End of it, yeah.
For the end of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it was really good. It was really, it's kind of a highlight of my career, actually.
My last question for you guys is, what do you hope to accomplish by fans reading this book? What do you want fans to feel and to know and kind of be the end result of this book? Brett?
You know, it kind of goes along with this thing we've been talking about. I mean, I hope there's a deep appreciation for all the people and events that took place that kind of ultimately built what BYU football has become, from those early years where it was unknown to the first big moments of national attention, to the stadium expanding, because our fan base, even when we were in the midst of like six straight losing seasons, we expand the stadium because we have fans that want to watch us play. And then all the people that have made up the program. I mean, we did a lot of research and tried to find from Banyans and published reports to list the people that had played on the team, not just the Letterman list that's typically there. So like people that never played in games. And,
yeah.
And we know there's going to be people that are missed because they, for whatever reason, were never listed on a roster and never played in a game and they were only on the team 1 year. But, you know, those people, hopefully we'll find out who they are and we can get them added to the other lists. But, you know, we tried to do things to let people have a little bit of a you know, bigger picture idea of all the different people that really helped make it all happen.
What about you, Jeff? What would you say?
The same thing that Brett just mentioned. All of that was part of the process. And we spent countless hours in the evenings just talking through where the direction of the book was changing and flowing as we went. But I look down the street from where we are right now and see that stadium, and I think in many ways it's a miracle. It's a miracle that, you know, from the great, from humble beginnings story, right, to where you know, things, the book hopefully does a good job of explaining how the program changed and grew and built and the key players throughout the process of that. There's a great chapter in there about President Wilkinson, the BYU president, and his role in it. Neither of us knew when we started this book, but we found it in the middle of it. We always wondered why couldn't we beat the local teams when we, you know, throughout the early era.
Mm-hmm.
And then we found out why. I'm going to leave that as a tease.
Oh, I was like, why? I want to know.
But there were individuals, like Brett said, along the way that just helped shape this thing. And in many ways, like Lavelle will talk about, you know, coaching with Tommy Husbeth, who was the head coach prior to him, and that period of time where they had Virgil Carter as our quarterback and started to throw the football. And Lavelle had to defend that in practice every day and started to realize, you know, maybe there's something to this. And so we tried to not only tell the story of BYU football, but also tell the evolution of a man and a program that changed college football, and why and how that happened. So there's some great stuff in there.
Hopefully people will be informed but entertained reading it, and ultimately it's just a celebration of a very unique legacy that really BYU football is. And it's among the best in the country. Last 50 years, we're top 10 in wins. Just a tribute to all the people that have been part of that.
I'm here with Duff Tittle and Brett Pine, authors of 100 Years of BYU Football. Duff and Brett, thank you so much for coming on. The book is released on June 3rd at All Deseret Books. That does it for us today. Thanks again to Duff Tittle and Brett Pine for coming on the show with me. Carter Bond and Tori Kimball helped produce this episode with senior producer Terry South. You can join the Cougar Tailgate wherever you get your podcasts, on Apple, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, or on BYUradio.org. Cougar Tailgate is a production of BYU Radio.